In this week's episode of Mr. Sludge's Neighborhood, Kevin talks about Monopoly, Xbox, the first two episodes of the 24th season of Top Gear, and he spins the wheel of insanity to find out the topic for the week. But first, a word from this week's sponsor, Goblin Musk by Stetson.
Stetson, cologne for men.
When you need the spirit of adventure to cover like a pongy cloud.
Stetson fits.
When you aren't embarking on a quest in Silver Marches, but still want to smell like it.
Stetson fits.
When you want a tavern wench to leave the room you've leveled up in.
Stetson fits.
That's right, partner. The bottle at the back of the medicine cabinet has a new D&D-themed edition, Goblin Musk. Looking to revisit those days of junior high when you covered yourself head to toe in father's hand-me-down cologne? Looking to mask that foul body odor with something even more foul? Pick up Goblin Musk and you won't be able to keep the flies off of you. You'll be beating the carrion off with a club. Order now and a greasy cowboy will slowly put a hat on you. In bed.
Stetson cologne for men.
And now for the news. In Why Is Everybody Complaining news, Hasbro has decided to update their classic board game Monopoly, and people are freaking the fuck out. Fans voted and Hasbro decided to replace the Thimbo, Wheelbarrow, and Shoe with a T-Rex, Rubber Ducky, and Penguin. You know what? Good. That's awesome. I love updates.
Oh, but Sledge, you don't understand. I always played the thimble in honor of my Mima who liked to sew. I can't believe they would do this.
You know what, whiny internet person? Everybody has at least 5 boxes of that game in a basement or a storage locker somewhere. Open it up, take out your old thimble, and use that with the new game. Or use an actual thimble. Hell, you could use an old toenail clipping and it wouldn't matter. Try using space marines and making exploding noises with your mouth when somebody lands on your hotel. It doesn't fucking matter. Besides, I want to be a T-Rex. In I'm glad they pay so close attention and listen to their fans, but I would really like a week to go by without my Xbox updating news. This both pisses me off and makes me happy. Microsoft is constantly fiddling, trying to make sure that they offer the best online service and security. And you know what? They do. In the home console market between Sony and Microsoft, Microsoft has had the edge since the founding of Xbox Live, and Sony has been playing catch-up. From security against DDoS attacks to features and services, the billion-dollar software giant out of Washington keeps the content flowing. But stop with the updates so often. I know, this is on purpose. If you roll out massive updates to an OS that is huge twice a year, there's going to be some massive hiccups to service, and large swaths of the population who have smaller internet pipes, or have unique settings or use old features. But damn it, I wanted to play Mass Effect today. And you know what, I did start it up in the morning before everybody else woke up. But once I had some free time, there was a problem on Microsoft's end. I would have normally just shrugged my shoulder and done something else if I hadn't wasted a half an hour trying to diagnose a problem that I couldn't fix. Seriously, it is cool that I will be able to use personal gamer picks. Yes, I love that the looking for group feature will be expanded and upgraded. Sure, joining a live broadcast is cool. But damn it, give me my half an hour back, you sorry, not so sorry assworks. Oh, and thanks for all the free stuff you keep sending us. I mean, Daytona USA really does bring me back to the shoving quarters in the arcade back in 1993. And it has to be compared to Grand Tour reviews. The first two episodes of the new season of Top Gear have hit the airwaves, and boy, is it a vast improvement over last year. After Chris Evans sacking and the veritable Raj of hosts, some of who could speak English, Sabine, and the terrible star in a rallycross car, we are finally back to the almost original Top Gear format. 3 hosts, silly tests, epic road trips, amazing scenery, star in a reasonably fast car. I mean, it's kind of like Grand Tour. Hell, both did a rather good review of the Alfa Romeo Giulia, but Chris Harris, being a short man that he is, didn't notice something that the tall Jeremy Clarkson did, and that is the location of a door frame in comparison to the actual door opening. The frame takes up so much space that a tall man had a hard time entering. I'm sure our own Ben Raven can relate. Anyway, the new Top Gear is pretty much like the original show, which is kind of embarrassing. There are literally scripted moments of dialogue that sound like they should be coming out of Clarkson and Hammond's mouth instead of Harris's and LeBlanc's. Don't believe me? Listen to this segment from Grand Tour, which aired last fall, and a segment from this week's Top Gear, and see if you notice anything similar.
Well?
This is rubbish.
I was just thinking exactly the same about this.
Were you?
This was boring me to death. It was like being stuck in a Victorian woman's novel.
But I'd rather that than being stuck in a telephone box with a panicking gorilla.
Rubbish.
It was trying to kill me. It just wants to hurt me. It wants to hurt me.
That's why I like it. This is a missionary position car.
Razor blade in the hands of a surgeon, sickle in the hands of a drunk peasant.
So, what'd you think? Huh?
Well, I think
this is your last bottle of water, by the way.
What?
Look, if you're a dental hygienist from Florida, or you keep a chihuahua, or you take selfies, I think it's a great car. Great, Matt.
Okay.
What about my car? Come on, tell me about my car.
Well, that is a nice car. I mean, if you are in the market for a supercar that is the most bland supercar you can find, that is it. I'm telling you, that is a bland supercar.
That's a meaningful 50-year marriage. That's a one-night stand.
Now, don't get me wrong. I laughed at both segments. Making absurd comparisons is a staple of Top Gear. Or it was, and maybe now it is again. But maybe that's the problem. Clarkson, May, and Hammond have developed a rapport over the past decade, and you truly believe that are closer to being friends than just colleagues. That's why their insults land so well, because they are delivered with meaning. The original Traveling Trinity are something that Rory, Chris, and Matt can't really be. They're dicks. They are arseholes to each other, sometimes to producers, but mainly to each other, all the time. They are children in middle-aged men's bodies, whereas Chris Harris, trying to be a jerk to the celebrities trying to post lap times, comes off as insincere and scripted. Rory Reed's fake enthusiasm about driving a Renault isn't funny. And LeBlanc? Well, he's just too much of a nice guy. Sure, he is well-spoken, a great driver, sometimes funny, and a decent enough actor. He hugs too many people. All the time! Even when they're trying to make fun of somebody, it never works. He's too self-deprecating to pull off those lines. Now, that's not to say that I don't like the new season of Top Gear. I do. Blasting through Kazakhstan was great. Driving a Lambo Huracan and a Porsche 911 Turbo from Vegas to the ski slopes was tremendous fun. Hell, when LeBlanc was coasting down a hill using nothing but gravity and brakes in a $200,000 supercar, I was actually on the edge of my seat waiting for him to go over the rails down the mountain. It's that kind of cinematic magic that makes you forget that it's all staged and that the drama is manufactured. So yeah, I like the new Top Gear. It's good. But don't expect me to feel the same way when they roll out the Top Gear America. Again. That shit's just awful.
Yeah, you're right. Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. So let's move on,
yes,
shall
let's
we?
Do that. Let's do that by popping some loose change in the ticket machine so we can park a while on Conversation Street.
Okay, Wheel. Last week you made me rant about the portrayal of space and time in movies. How about something less irritating to talk about, huh? Something like how wonderful it is to be a nerd in the 21st century. Well, most of the time. All right? Wheel of Insanity, turn, turn, turn. Tell me the topic which I shall burn. Okay, go. Go. Wait, stop, stop. Not that one. It says, rant about aggregate grading scales in comic and video game reviews. Well, fuck. This was actually a huge problem for us at the Court of Nerds a while back. And for us, I mean for me. I ranted for over a day, much to my co-host's chagrin. I loved grading scales in theory, but I hate them in practice. To put it simply, I'm rather OCD like that. I cannot simply throw out a number grade based on a feeling. That number must have a weighted analytic behind it. You know, you have to have a formula in order to reach that number for it to make sense to me. Show your work. Many, many, many publications do this, but never really hold themselves accountable to that formula. The example I'd like to give is from Game Informer's review of Disgaea 3 for the PS3, published in August 2008. Game Informer, like most others, rated on a 1 to 10 grading scale. Disgaea 3 received an 8.25 out of 10. This is a rather good score, but when you break down the rating, it becomes problematic. You see, GI grades games on graphic, sound, playability, entertainment, and replay value. Each is given a rating that is supposed to inform the overall score. So if one section of this game was completely lacking, then the overall score should be reflected by at least one-fifth of that overall score. In the review for the game that the author writes, quote, "This is getting embarrassing. The art direction is great and all, but this would look at home on a PS1, end quote. I'm not sure about you, but if a game gets its graphics compared to being on a system two generations ago, then that should spell trouble for grading. Let's assume that means Disgaea 3 got a 1 out of 10 for graphics. Then it would have a perfect score of 10 out of 10 in every other category. But you know it doesn't. Under entertainment, the author writes, quote, "Disgaea's level of grinding formula is starting to get stale, end quote. He calls the soundtrack, quote, hit or miss, end quote, and then the replay value is, quote, moderate, which by definition means in the middle. There is no way you can retroactively break down the justification for the score based on their formula. It's almost as if the author had a score in mind, or one was given to him, and then he wrote a review which was far more critical than the score indicated. The bigger you are, the harder it is to come up with an honest review because the revenue and the publisher relationships are inextricably tied to the publication's performance. This isn't new. Hell, Jerry Holikins and Mike Krawlik, Tycho and Gabe from Penny Arcade, highlighted these over a decade ago in what they called the 6-9 grading scale. In a 1-10 grading scale of video games, 98% of those games reviewed would land somewhere in this 6-9 range. Now, one might argue that, indeed, most of these games might deserve to be in that range, then why not have it in a 1-4 star scale range? Some publications do, but those scores will get aggregated out to some kind of decimal system that doesn't translate well on Metacritic. 3-4 stars in a game is 75% after all, and publishers want games to be above 80% on Metacritic. This is, in part, why I feel that this is all ridiculous. But it has become necessary for publishers and reviewers to do it. Some sites try to buck this trend, like Kotaku, who just say the good and the bad, or some sites will just say buy or don't buy. The problem is, though, with binary choice selection, you're trying to write to a general populace, then most games should be a don't buy, unless you're into that kind of thing, which is next to useless advice. So what's the answer, Sledge? You ranted and raved about this topic. How would you fix the industry? Pfft, hell if I know. That's all the show I can pack in this week. Make sure you check out our super amazing 100th episode next week, where the whole crew gets around the microphone to talk about our favorite moments over the past 2 years. It's like masturbating, except without the guilt afterward. Okay, I never feel guilt. See you next week, and remember, two wrongs don't make a right, but three lefts do.